I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we're going to start off at Narromine.
Right, and what are we going to see?
Well, we're going to be at the Aviation Museum in Narromine, and there we're going to be chatting with Peter Kirath.
Yes, that'll be interesting.
Peter Kirath, I've got to tell you, could walk and talk underwater with a mouthful of marbles. What he doesn't know about the Aviation Museum isn't worth knowing.
No, it's a very interesting place.
Absolutely fascinating. And even when I tried to wind him up after 15 minutes, he said, "But Phil, there's so much more to say. There's so many more stories to talk about." Oh, goodness me. But seriously, folks, if you're interested in aviation, Narromine is the place to go and Peter Kirath is the person to see.
That's right.
Now, straight after that, what's on?
You're going to be chatting to Jeff Dieth, and this week's topic is compliance plates.
Now, compliance plates is such a confusing subject. Tare weight, GCM, GVM, it confuses everybody, including me. But Jeff Dieth from Checkweight, he's the guy to see, or he's the guy to talk to, because he will straighten everything out for you in relation to compliance plates.
Right.
Now, straight after that.
You're going to Monday Monday.
Am indeed. And I'm going to be chatting with two lovely ladies. They are volunteers there at the Monday Monday Bash. It's Deb and Chrissy, and they're going to be telling us all about what it's like to be a volunteer at the Monday Monday Bash. But apart from all of that, can I start the show with a song?
Yes, you can.
Now, this song relates to us because, as you know, we do travel quite a lot.
We do.
And this is one of my favourites by Johnny Williamson, and it is called Campfire on the Road.
Very good.
And it's all about us. So, listeners, I'm going to kick it off with that, and we'll be back with lots of Roman Oz straight after Johnny Williamson's Campfire on the Road.
Camping under the leopard wood as the sun goes down and the fire is good, 'cause I've managed to find myself some brigalow. And it wouldn't be the same, I know, contemplating the fire glow without my darling out here on the road. Now it's a very special thing to hear the little cricket sing, and there's no need to say another word. Just watch the campfire steal the show, let the inner feelings flow, release the tension out here on the road. We must never let them take this life away. Our stock roots belong to one and all. Drovers, dreamers all agree, poets, aborigines, we have a right to light a campfire on the road. Some people like a riverbed with river gums high overhead, unroll the swag on a drift of river sand. But me, I search for different sights. I'm not afraid of min min lights, and I welcome spirits out here on the road. And I welcome any signs I see in a land that's been so good to me, that lead me to the soul of inner man. I can tell you there are days I see the earth in different ways that keep me searching out here on the road. We must never let them take this life away. Our stock roots belong to one and all. Drovers, dreamers all agree, poets, aborigines, we have a right to light a campfire on the road. Just camping under the leopard wood as the sun goes down and the fire is good, 'cause I've managed to find myself some brigalow. And it wouldn't be the same, I know, contemplating the fire glow without my darling out here on the road. We must never let him take this life away. All Stockroots belong to one and all. Drovers, dreamers all agree, poets, aborigines, we have a right to light a campfire on the road. We have a right to light a campfire on the road.
Hello listeners, Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz, and we're at Narromine, and I'm chatting with Peter Kirath.
Yes.
Peter Kirath, and he is the chairman of the Narromine Aviation Museum. How are you today, Peter?
Oh, Philip, I'm exceptionally well, mate. If I was any fitter, I'd be dangerous.
Yes, I hear that saying quite a lot, and I say that to my partner, Lynn, and she looks at me and says, don't talk to me that way. So, Peter, tell us a little bit about this fabulous museum. First of all, how long have you been involved? You're the chairman. You've obviously been here a while.
I said 25 years, probably about that, although the museum hasn't been here that long.
Okay.
It was opened in 2002.
Right.
And so, yes, I've been involved for a fair period. But what we're doing here is telling the story of aviation in Narromine.
Okay.
It sort of really started with Keith and Ross Smith when they landed here in the Vickers Vimy in February of 1920 on the Great Air Race.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had quite a lot of planes used to fly in and out of here during the 20s, and including Charles Kingsford Smith and others. But then the Narromine Aero Club was set up in 1929, and we think it's one of the oldest in regional Australia these days.
Right.
And they set up T.E. Perry, listed 74, rented 700 acres to the Aero Club for a shilling a year.
Yes.
And so that got flying going. They had the first air show here in 1930.
Right.
And then had others in 31, 35 and 38.
Okay.
And so you can see that Narromine was quite a hub. That first one they had over 5,000 people here then.
Right.
And they ran trains up from Bathurst and Orange and Parkes and Forbes to Narromine.
Okay.
And so then, of course, the war came and they set up number 5, Elementary Flying Training School here.
Right.
The first 4 were in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Brisbane. Mm-hmm. Number 5 was in Narromine. And during the next 4 years, they trained 2,850 pilots here, which was over 20% of all the pilots trained in Australia.
Wow.
So, but then they wound it up and we got 8 OTU, an operational training unit here, but they were only here for a couple of months and they moved them to Parkes because we got 618 Squadron RAF here.
Okay.
And they had about 35 mosquitoes here and they were dropping Barnes Wallace's bouncing bomb.
Aha, okay.
And so that was... but then, of course, the Americans dropped the atomic bombs in early August. Mm-hmm. They wound the squadron up here. But they did sell the aircraft in 1947. They had a sale.
Yep.
So you could buy a mosquito with engines for 75 quid.
Wow.
you could buy one without engines for 25 quid.
Okay.
And you could buy a Merlin still in the grease, still in its box for 10 quid.
Wow.
And okay. But the bonus... Mainly the farmers, everything was rationed. Fuel was rationed at, you know, 5 gallons a month and all that sort of stuff. But when a lot of the farmers bought the old the aircraft for spare parts, they wanted the wheels and the nuts and bolts because everything in those days was rationed.
Mm-hmm.
So they found that when they got the planes out on the farm, they were full of fuel.
Right.
But it was 150 octane, which was a bit hot for the old tractors.
Yes.
So they used to shandy at 50-50 with kerosene, and it was just right.
That
so
perfect.
That was really a big bonus.
Okay.
So, so that's what that display is about over there. And then we've got also a list of all the Narromine POWs.
So right.
There's 35 there.
Okay.
And so, then when they wound that up, Qantas started here about 1948, and they trained here for 20-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Started with DC-4s, then the Constellations and Super Constellations, and then in 1957, I think they ordered the 707s, and so they trained here touch and go, day and night. But anyway, so there's been a lot of activity here.
So what about the World War II veterans, Tiger Moths? Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, that was number 5 elementary flying training school.
Oh, okay,
school.
That's what
they had about
those.
85
yes.
Tiger Moths here.
All righty.
We have been through all the records of the people that trained here and checked all their initials,
right.
All the spellings,
mm-hmm.
What units they served in, the right. ranks they got to, the decorations they got, and most importantly, whether or not they came back. And we found that over 25% of those blokes didn't come back. That's right.
Wow.
So
okay.
Over 770 or 80, yeah. So.
Okay. So what other things in the museum do you think would interest people travelling through?
Well, the planes. We have currently 4 planes in here.
Right.
3 of which are unique in the world. This
okay.
is a Corbin Super Ace.
Okay.
It was imported as a kit
right.
from the States by Jack Coomber
uh-huh.
in 1937.
Right.
And he assembled it. And used to fly it back and forth to Dubbo
right.
During the pre-war. And then, of course, the war came that saw no action. And then he used to fly it a bit afterwards and then sold it off. And we got it back probably 9 or 10 years ago now.
Okay.
And we had it restored. We lost it. We didn't know where it was
okay.
for quite a number of years. But so we've been in touch with the Corbin Society in the States, and this is the only one in the world that they know of.
Wow.
They said they built 8. There's plenty of baby aces around, but none of these.
None of the Super Aces. Wow. Does it still fly, or does it still...
You could, but no, it won't. We
okay.
don't fly it.
No, I don't, but it still would work.
Oh, it would do, yes.
Yeah,
yeah
okay.
it would do. The engine goes and all that sort of stuff.
Since we've
restored it. We've had the engine running. Flying it.
So it's a unique piece. It's the only one in the world.
That's right. And it's the same with the Venture glider here.
Yes.
Now, that was built by Jack Coomber
okay.
and a consortium of Narromine and Dubbo men in Dubbo.
Right.
In 1951-52.
Mm-hmm.
You got the plans from England. And but you had to supply all the materials yourself.
Right.
So they built it, and they used to fly it in Dubbo. I think then went down to Orange and roundabout. But anyway, and then they retired it after about 30 years. There was only 4 of them built, apparently.
Mm. Okay.
And this is the only one that's left in the world.
So... All right, so what about this yellow one to our left?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you that in a minute. We've got the Wright Flyer here.
Okay.
Now, that was built in Narromine between 2000 and 2005 by the Hayden family.
Yes.
That is, as far as we're aware, the only replica that's flown properly in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a replica of the Model A. Cole Pay was a local bloke who moved to Scone, but he used to come and fly it.
Okay.
It's flown 16 or 18 times now. And so there have been plenty of replicas built, but none of them have flown like this one.
That one's actually flown.
It's flown 16 or 18 times and gets up to about 8 or 9 metres, flies a kilometre to a couple of kilometres along the runway. You wouldn't leave the runway in it. So that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the tiger moth here.
Yeah, that's the one.
We've had that in now. It was donated by a local group who had it restored. They bought it in the 80s, I believe. They used to fly it, then they had it restored. And then, unfortunately, somebody ground-looped it, which cracked the spars in the wings.
Oh, okay.
And so that's $100,000 to get that repaired. So they, in their wisdom, decided to donate it to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was built in 1941. It's an English tiger moth, because they also built tiger moths in Australia. And then it's also got a Gypsy Major engine in it, but it's a Stag Lane, which indicates that it's an English engine.
Yes.
And the other one, the other engine there is also a Stag Lane. So, yeah, we had 85 odd of these here. Some of the classes that we had during the elementary flying training school had over 90 trainees in them. So we have then a very interesting collection here,
mm-hmm.
The Bailey collection. Tom Bailey was the CO here during the Second World War for a couple of years. What we didn't know at the time was that he was in 3 Squadron in the First World War,
and
he died probably 20 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
and their family decided that they'd like to have his material here. And so we have the propeller of his RE8, so that's over 100 years old. We have his Sidcot flying overalls there,
yes,
which was designed by Sid Cotton, who was a Queensland bloke. And as soon as that's what the Australian Flying Corps used to use,
mm-hmm.
and as soon as they got to Egypt and the Royal Flying Corps saw it, they said, oh, wow, that's what we want. And so they started making them in England.
Uh-huh.
So the very interesting part is, though, that 3 Squadron was the squadron that captured the Red Baron's plane when it crashed.
Right.
And so we have a piece of fabric there off the Red Baron's plane, von Richthofen.
Okay.
And so we also have a piece of fabric there called a lozenge.
Mm-hmm.
That's off a Fokker D7, made under contract by Albatross. It's number 534 made, and it was made in 1918. So we have also Tom Bailey's, all his medals there, including the DFC. So it's very interesting display. We've got the little numbering system in there where you can get the oversight by reading the red sign.
Yes.
And then if you want to go into the detail, you look at the numbers,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be all described down the front here.
Difference, because it is all run totally by volunteers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
so,
definitely.
And it's not at the cost to come in?
It's for adults, it's $10.
Right.
For seniors, it's $7.
Okay.
And for kids, high school kids, for primary school kids, it's $5. Okay. Although the little kids, we don't charge for that. No.
And all that money goes into keeping
museum. That's right.
Spick and span. And
that's right. Yeah. Yep.
Fabulous. And
well, we're always got up to. See, we've got the Jabiru there.
Yes.
Now, we only got that last week.
Mm-hmm.
That is number 004.
Okay.
It's the first one commercially sold in Australia. They're made just out of Brisbane.
Right.
And from what I've read so far, since 1980, they've built over 2,000 Jabirus, a lot of which go overseas because
mm-hmm.
they're very highly sought after.
Right.
And but a chap offered us this one, which we purchased from him, and we've just cleaned it up and we're going to hang it from the rafters. So it's number, as I say,
004.
So first one commercially sold in Australia. So So that's, but there's always money involved in those sort of things. But we try and keep upgrading. We've upgraded this about 2 months ago. We've put in the Narromine Aero Club one over there. That cabinet was empty. We built it a year ago, and that's given that corner a big lift. And then, of course, we've moved some photos around. We've got an interesting photo up there. Do you know who the fellow in the middle is?
I have no idea.
That's okay. Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, really? The astronaut?
That's right.
Okay.
Second man on the moon. Yeah, okay. Well, Buzz Aldrin came out here when the Wright flyer first flew in 05.
Okay.
And I looked after him all day, and lovely bloke to talk to. And then we've got Keith Hayden on the left, who was a plane mechanic during the Second World War and who worked here and a lot of other places. And on the right, we have Eric Hayden, his son, and he was the mover and shaker in getting the Wright flyer built.
Okay.
So, but his father and his mother gave him a lot of help and so on. So, yeah.
All right, Peter, well, we're going to have to wind this up now.
Oh, are you?
We could, unfortunately, it's radio. Yes,
you would. There's a bloody lot more work
on TV. I can see that. I can tell.
The women's display there, Nancy Bird Walton and others.
Okay. Well, the thing is, it is radio, yes. Well, brief overview.
Got the big photo here.
Yes. So I guess the thing is, it's a fabulous place to visit. You're not going to see it in half an hour. We've been chatting for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So really, how long do you think? Would you estimate, like, to see it, a quick view, it'd have to take you an hour?
It would. It depends on your interest. Like, a lot of people just want to, I encourage them to read the red signs.
Yes.
Which we've got in most of the displays, and that gives them a quick oversight. You can read that in a minute or less.
Yes.
And that gives you a quick oversight of what to look at.
Mm-hmm.
If you then want to get into the detail, you can spend another half an hour just reading the details.
The details
that we've
along
got.
To the red
so
signs.
So, look, you can stay. A lot of people, particularly when they've got little kids like this, might stay in here for 40 minutes.
Yep.
But then you get some of the people that are into aviation and fair income, they'll spend all day.
They'll spend all day, yeah. You can understand
three
that.
3 or 4 hours easily.
Easily.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So. Well, this is the place to come then if you're interested in aviation in Narromine.
Yeah, that's right.
Peter, I'm going to have to wind this up, my friend. I'd love to chat longer with you if we do have a bit of a time limit.
There's a lot more stories though, mate, I can tell you. You'll have to come back tomorrow.
I will. What sort of song can I play for you to wind this up? It's got to be Australian.
Yeah, well, I think I like the Road to Gundagai or Waltzing Matilda or just like those. And they would be pre-war. They'd be 1930s songs, I'd imagine,
absolutely.
Or 1920s.
Yes.
That's what I like.
One of those ones.
Yeah, not so much one of the country or one of the modern ones.
Yes.
I like that sort of 1920s, 1930s era.
Leave it up to me. I'll try and find a 78 copy somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, I know. No, that's really good. Really good. So, anyway, yeah.
All right, listeners, we're going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after one of the original 1920 versions of The Road to Gundagai.
There's a track winding back to an old-fashioned shack along the road to Gundagai, where the blue gums are growing and the murrum binge is flowing beneath that sunny sky. My daddy and mother are waiting for me, and the pals of my childhood once more I will see. Then no more will I roam when I'm heading right for home along the road to Gundagai.
Welcome back, listeners. If you've just joined us, my name is Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz. And we have Jeff Diaf from Checkweight with us again today. How are you, Jeff?
I'm going great, Phil. And yourself?
Oh, mate, fabulous, fabulous as always, and always a pleasure to chat with you. My listeners are enjoying it and learning so much, which is so important in this business. This business of retiring, buying a caravan and doing the big lap is a lot more needed than just going out and buying a new car and a caravan. They actually need to know what's involved, and you're keeping us up to date. So thank you so much for that.
No worries, Phil. It's my pleasure. And hopefully everybody's enjoying what we're talking about.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are. Now, last week we mentioned compliance plates, and we are going to discuss that today. So tell us all about the importance of the information that's on the compliance plates.
So look, at the compliance plate is actually quite important. But one of the things that you have to realise is there's no standard for a compliance plate in Australia.
Right.
So different caravan manufacturers may put different information on it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at a new caravan, or and we'll look at new caravans versus secondhand caravans because they're a bit different.
Yep.
So if you're looking at buying a new caravan, you know, check out what the information is on the compliance plate and when you're looking in the yard.
Right.
Now, there'll be the standard, you know, information. You know, there'll be manufacturer, make, model. There'll be a VIN number, the date of manufacture, those sorts of things. So they're pretty standard.
Yep.
Now, the weight-related ones are, you know, tear mass, your ATM, GTM, axle group ratings, and tow ball.
Okay.
So your tear mass is, and we alluded to this when we talked about acronyms a few weeks ago,
yep,
is what the caravan weighed when it was manufactured.
Okay.
Now, some manufacturers, and I won't mention them, but they sell a lot of caravans in Australia,
uh-huh,
don't actually put a tear mass on their compliance plates anymore.
They don't?
It's sort of interesting.
Right.
And I think part of that, and you know, this is me guessing, stems from the point of view that people would buy a caravan, get the dealer to put a heap of stuff on it, then they take it over a weighbridge or get a weigher, like a check weight to weigh it, and then they go back and say, but the tear mass is different.
Mm.
And that's because the dealership's added stuff to it.
Okay.
So you will find it on your registration.
Yes.
So on either online, if you go through in New South Wales, you go through Service New South Wales, it will have a tear mass on it. But there's no, or on your registration papers, but there's nothing on the compliance plate.
Okay.
But most manufacturers do have it there.
Okay.
Then you'll have your ATM, which we refer to, which is your aggregate trailer mass.
Yes.
So that's the maximum weight the caravan can weigh whilst unhitched.
Yes.
It will also have a GTM, which is your gross trailer mass, which is the weight on the wheels, so what it can weigh when it's hitched.
Yes.
Now, the tow ball ones are really interesting. There's usually two or three related to tow balls.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is ball loading at tear.
Yes.
So that's what the tow ball weighed when the caravan was manufactured.
Mm.
So it's not a recommendation, mm-hmm, and it's not what it should be when you're towing.
Right.
It's an indication of how heavy the caravan may have been when it was manufactured.
Right.
Now, I've got to say, I've weighed over 500 caravan combinations now. And it took me a while to look at a compliance plate, look at the design of the caravan, know whether this caravan is going to be light or heavy at the front.
Okay.
I can do that now. So it's really hard for you as a consumer to walk in and look at this caravan and go, oh, it's got a tow ball weight of 100 kilos, so that's really good.
Yep.
Or it's got a tow ball weight of 250, that's really good.
Okay.
But look at it, percentage of your tear mass. Okay. The other one is it'll have maximum permissible ball loading.
Yep.
So that's generally, say, you know, most caravans, that will be 350 kilos, unless, you know, you're up in the 4-ton caravans or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not most of us.
Okay.
There will be the occasional caravan, though, that will actually have a maximum permissible ball loading, which is less than 350.
Okay.
So that's the maximum that the caravan manufacturer said you can have your ball weight at. So there are a couple to be very aware of from a weight point of view.
Okay.
One of the other ones is the axle group rating. Now, this is an interesting one, and I see this. It's usually the maximum that the axles as a group can take in
right.
weight.
Okay.
So if your caravan doesn't have a lot of payload, you may look at upgrading, and that's the ATM or the GTM of the caravan.
Right.
That's something that you can look at to know whether you may be able to do that in the future if your payload is quite low.
Okay.
The other information that you'll get on a compliance plate, which is quite relevant and it's weight related, is your tyre pressures and your tyre load rating.
Right.
Now, I'm not a tyre salesman and I'm not going to recommend anything, but what I would say is that I get asked a lot, what tyre pressures should I be running? And I go, I don't know, but what's on your compliance plate?
Uh-huh.
And they go, don't know, I haven't looked at it. Okay. Yeah. So there's a recommendation that, you know, this is what the tyre pressure should be at tear when it's cold or at GTM.
Okay.
Okay. So to me, that's a pretty good starting point. It also maybe have a tyre load rating. So what each tyre is allowed to have, so like at the maximum weight, and also a speed rating.
Yep.
So so the compliance plate is quite important from that point of view.
Yep. So in, you know, you mentioned before the tear, like the tow ball weight at tear, when there's nothing in the van, and it's why do they have to have two tow ball weights? You said there was one was at tear weight, and then one was
the maximum.
Yeah, I mean, who cares what the tow ball weight is at tear? Because you're never going to tow it around empty, are you? Or is that just a confusing thing to have on there?
Look, I think it is actually quite confusing and misleading in some respects from a consumer point of view.
Mm.
Look, I don't know exactly why. You know, there's probably some legislation thing that says that you have to. But if you actually look at the plate, and I'll say this 90% of the time, if you add the tow ball at tear to the GTM rating, that will equal your ATM rating.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily the way it should be, I've read, but that's generally what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's how they actually work out your GTM rating.
Okay.
Okay. But for example, if you've got a tow ball, say your ATM rating's 2.5 ton, and you've got a tow ball which is 100 kilos, then that's a pretty low percent.
Yes.
If it was 250 kilos, so the tow ball at tear, which is exactly 10%.
Okay.
That's an indication to me that this is a quite heavy caravan.
Mm.
And if you've got a big box and a tunnel boot at the front, then it's going to be very difficult for you to use that storage. And I've actually seen that where a tow ball weight, I think it was about 200 kilos on a 2.4 caravan.
Yep.
So, and then he put another box and a fridge in the front and ended up with a tow ball at about 330 and was towing with an MUX, so could only have a maximum of 300.
Yep.
So if you start to get your head around it and look, well, this tow ball is very heavy, where's the storage?
Yep.
And you'll find that hybrid caravans, because they've got the fridge and the kitchen and everything at the front, are naturally very heavy at the front.
Okay.
And that's why a lot of them will have these two spare wheels and the water tank at the back to take weight off
the ball. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good thing, though, or a bad thing to try and, you know, take it off the they've got it all on the front, and really, in order for you to get the best tow, you've got to add things. Oh, they've added things to the back. And I guess this is one reason when people see that, oh, this guy's got bicycles hanging off the back of his caravan, and look how straight it sits. Well, that could be purely because he's got a really heavy front tow ball weight and he's trying to distribute some weight.
It could be. I think in a hybrid, they're designed that way.
Yep.
So I think it's very different to us adding weight at the back to counter a heavy tow ball.
Yep.
And I see it all the time. I know we talked about tow ball weights before, but somebody will put, the generator, which weighs 30 kilos at the back.
Yeah.
So then they'll put 30 kilos at the front.
Okay.
Now the percentage is not the same.
Yep.
So what the 30 kilos at the back is taking off is not the same as the 30 kilos you're putting at the front.
Yeah.
So it's putting, it's making it different.
Yep.
But I say to people when I, you're just making a seesaw worse.
Yeah.
By putting weight at the front and the back.
Yep.
So if your tow ball is too heavy, move the weight back that you've got at the front or put it over the axle.
Mm-hmm.
Or just remove the weight, to give you a lower tow ball weight.
Right.
I think sometimes that's the cheapest and easiest option, but it's the least popular option to actually take things out of the van and leave it at home.
Yes, well, that's the thing. You see, everybody wants to take everything, don't they? Even though there's a kitchen sink in there, they seem to want to take their own kitchen sink. They want to take absolutely everything that's at home. And, I mean, I've seen people. I saw a chap on a trip once, and he had a Honda 2.5K generator, 2.2K, and I said, what have you got that for, your air conditioner? He said, no, that's for the wife's hair straightener and the hair dryer. And I couldn't believe it. She was standing outside drying her hair, and he said, it's the only time I use this blasted thing is so she can dry her hair on a rainy day. So
yeah.
Lugging around a blasted great generator so he can run a hair dryer. He said, I've never used it on the air conditioner, believe it or not. It's only for the wife's hair dryer.
And my wife is a hairdresser, so I can sort of understand that. But there's 12-volt ones. They may not be as good.
Not as effective.
And there's also, the fresh air.
That's true.
But weight. I mean, I had one guy I know, he had a nice big fridge in the caravan. Then most people put a big fridge in the
back of the car.
In the back of the car,
like,
and then they put another one on the front. So he actually had three fridges.
Oh wow!
And I sort of questioned him. Said why? And he said, well, I've got drinks in one, and I've got one as a freezer, and then we've just got food in the other one.
Yep.
And he said, I don't want to run out of food. And I said, mate, you're going to run out of power and water before you run out of food. I suppose we're trying to do every eventuality. I'm not sure what's happened to the humble old Esky. Those Eskies are a lot lighter and a lot easier to move around than the big 90-litre fridge.
Look, the humble old Eskies have been something to carry fish in when you go out for the day. No, I don't think people use Eskies anymore. I do see them occasionally. But even I've seen people with tents have got battery-operated fridges running from their cars, you know what I mean? Like the humble old Esky has gone to the humble old camping heaven, I think, with a lot of people.
I suppose I see the fridges and the fridge slides and the extra battery and everything and the solar panel. I see the weight.
Yeah.
I think I said to you in another show, I talk about weight, not convenience.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's your business. And the more we talk, the more I understand that most people are carrying far too many things that they don't really need. And it's just to say, but if I need it, if I have it, I mean, like myself, I carry more tools than I know what to do with, but I always think, what about if somebody breaks down and needs them? They won't need to call a mechanic. All they need to do is operate my stuff because I've got far more stuff than I ever never need, and I'm guilty of it as well. So,
I think we all are from time to time, Phil.
Yep.
So I think no one else has to take tools because they'll see you on the road.
They will indeed. Right. You said that to me the last time. I'll turn it into a business. I'll have tools for hire on the side of the road. Matey, we got it. You going?
I was just about to say I do repeat myself for emphasis sometimes.
That's fine. That is perfectly fine, my friend. We're gonna wind this one up, my friend. What can we play for you? What's your Aussie song for today?
Well, this one's not for me. It's for my good wife, Jewel,
okay.
who is a big support behind the scenes
yes.
for Checkweight.
Okay.
And it's one of her favourites growing up, Daddy Cool, Eagle Rock.
Eagle Rock, Daddy Cool. Does she know how to do the dance?
Absolutely.
She
everybody,
does?
She said, it was guaranteed to get you on the dance floor when Eagle Rock come on.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Fabulous song. Fabulous band, Daddy Cool. Ross Wilson. Ross Wilson is still going, the lead singer of that band, and still performing today. Fabulous. What are we going to discuss next week? Or are you going to keep us in suspense?
Keep it in suspense.
All right, let's keep it in suspense. Now, listeners, if you do have any questions for Jeff, okay, regarding weight, you can email me at info@romanoz.com. www.blueguns.com.au. Okay, now we did have an email a couple of weeks ago from a chap named Rod. He was from Victoria wanting to know about carrying water in his tanks when travelling. And if you do have any questions at all about weight, send them to me. That's info@romanoz.com.au, and we will put them to Jeff on the program. Jeff, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Until next week, you take care and have a lovely week.
Thanks, Phil. Travel safe.
Thank you so much. Stick around, listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after Daddy Cool's Eagle Rock.
Turn around once and we'll do the Eagle Rock.
Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Oh, g'day, listeners. Phil C here. This is Roman Oz, and I'm coming to you from the big Monday Bash. And the guests on the program today is Debbie Ford and Chrissy Huxley. How are you, Chrissy?
Great. Wonderful.
Thank you so much for talking to me. And Debbie Ford, you are Chrissy's support person.
That's correct, yes.
Now, tell us a little bit. Debbie, you've been to the Bash before.
Yep, sure have.
So how many Bashes have you been to? Is this your second or have you been to others?
No, this is my second Bash.
Okay,
yep.
And you're one of the volunteer workers here?
Yeah, yep.
You are? And what's your job here, Debbie?
I'm a road marshal, yeah.
You're a road marshal?
Yeah. So excellent. I'm one of the first people that people see when they arrive at the front gate.
Okay.
So, yeah, love it. Everyone's excited to be here. And, we just check the wristbands and the car stickers to ensure everyone's, paid and, yeah. So, yeah, it's fun.
So how did you find out, how did you find out about volunteering for the big Monday Bash?
We went to purchase a ticket in 2021 and they were sold out.
Okay.
And then just stumbled across something on a web page that said about volunteering, and we really were excited to see the lineup.
Okay.
And so we thought, oh, well, it's the only way to go if we're going to want to, to see the entertainment. So, yeah, that's why we volunteered. This time round, we volunteered because it was so much fun last time.
Yeah. So you get to see the concert.
Yep.
And you don't get to have to pay.
That's correct.
And you enjoy doing what you're doing as a volunteer.
Love it. It's a great community. Everyone's really upbeat. It's fun. Okay. Great way to meet people. Yeah. And we actually have the best position, I believe, in the whole campground.
Okay. So tell us, you're also here with your partner.
Yep.
Now, what does your partner do? Is he a marshal as well?
He is, yep.
Okay.
Yep. Harry, have a chat. No. He's...
Harry. Have a chat.
He's over there.
I love that. He's over there chatting somewhere. He's left me with the two good-looking girls, listeners. All right. Now, Chrissy Huxley, listeners, I understand, Chrissy, you originally bought a ticket
to come
and see the show.
I bought my ticket. I found out Deb was coming, and it gave me that little bit of a nudge to really want to come out. So I bought a ticket. Didn't feel confident in being a volunteer.
Yeah.
And then with Deb's support and backup, I kind of spoke up on Sunday and said, maybe I might put my hand up to volunteer.
Okay.
And I've just done my first shift.
Fantastic. Yep. Now, the reason why you didn't feel very comfortable or a bit anxious, I'll just let the listeners know, you were involved in an accident a little while ago, and as a result of that, you sustained a brain injury.
Yes.
And this is the reason why Debbie is your support person.
Yes.
So you've come out here with the intention of enjoying the music.
Yes.
But with, I guess, the strength and support and the help from Debbie, yes, you decided to have a go at being a volunteer.
Yes.
So
yeah.
I guess next year when you come out here, you won't have to pay the fee because it's about
$600
for a ticket, isn't it? It's
not
cheap.
No, it wasn't cheap.
Yeah.
I'd bought the 2-day early pass and the insurance in case I couldn't come.
Okay.
And I'm glad I actually put my hand up to volunteer.
Fantastic.
It was a good experience. Thanks to Dee, who was my leader over on the information tent.
Yeah.
Deb and her partner Steve, they've been my travel buddies because it's my first time.
Yes, travelling alone.
Travelling alone.
Because you are travelling alone.
Yes.
And you didn't actually travel with Deb and Steve for the entire journey, did you? You met them sort of halfway here or something?
Yeah, we met up in
Cobar.
Mm-hmm. And came from there. So I did a family hop between home and Cobar.
Yeah.
And and towing my van, I've only been back on the road
2 years licensed. How about you?
Back on the road, being able to drive since December.
Okay.
December just gone. Wow. So I got my van serviced and my car serviced. And
so you've got you're towing a caravan as well.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I'm not going to mention too much. I'm not going to dwell on the injury, but I know you were involved in a pretty bad accident.
Yes.
And you did sustain a little bit of brain damage, but hey, it's not holding you back. You're travelling alone, you're towing a caravan, getting your life back in order, and here you are volunteering, and you're at the information desk. Now, I don't know which is more difficult. I think you got the more difficult job, because you've got to answer a million questions. All you have to do, Deb, is you just kind of smile, look pretty, and wave them through. So you've definitely got the more difficult job,
Chrissy. I was surprised I actually picked it up. It took me back to previous life experience, I guess, and I felt confident with it. So
now that you've had the opportunity of doing this, Chrissy, do you think if Deb's not available, are you, first of all, Deb, are you going to be available for this next year? Are you going to
make? I totally hope so. I love it. It's great. Yeah.
So you'd recommend being a volunteer at these events for anybody?
Look, I would, but I don't want everyone to do it because otherwise they're not going to make any money. And then we're not going to get such a good spot. Look, I think it's a way to go. We had the opportunity, as I said, to purchase a ticket this year and we went, no, volunteering's fun.
Volunteering's fun. You're safe. Well, you're virtually getting paid, aren't you? Because the price of a ticket is it's a three-day event. It's about $600 or $700 per ticket. So for you and your husband, you're looking at anywhere between $1,200 to $1,400.
That's right.
You've saved that.
Yep.
So it means you get to buy lots of merchandise.
That's right. Put the petrol in your car.
Pays for your fuel.
Yeah.
And you get to see the show for free.
Yep.
So what about you? Now, back to you, Chrissy. Now, if for whatever reason Debbie and Steve can't come, do you think you'll come by yourself?
Yes, I reckon I possibly could come by myself.
Yes.
And I may even bring my disabled son too.
How old's your disabled son?
He's 37.
Okay, 37.
Yeah, he didn't want to come this time because he likes Five Star.
Okay. you know what you got to tell him? You got to say, son, if you want Five Star, I'm going to give you 5 million stars.
Yes,
because you can set your swag up and stare at the sky.
Yes.
Because there's nothing like being out here, is it? It's an absolutely fantastic place.
No, it's been great.
Place.
It's been great.
Yeah.
It's handy having Steve to fix things that I can't.
Okay.
So that would be a little concern, I guess, if I didn't have a support person to come with me.
Yes.
But I think I'm willing to give it a go.
Fantastic.
Single women in camps actually attract people who want to help, I believe. I don't know, around here everyone's like, everyone good, someone just walked past here before because I was just sitting here on my lonesome and, do you need anything?
Yeah. I notice that because I do a lot of travelling, as my listeners know, and I do interview a lot of single or lone, I say lone, female travellers.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask them the question, do you have difficulty? Do you, worry about where you stay and so on? And they go, look, as a lone female traveller, there's always a lot of men that are willing to help.
Yeah.
They don't try and hit on you. No. They just say, hey, girls, you need a hand, and all they want to do is help you out.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll have a fear if you do decide to come by yourself. And if you come as a volunteer, don't forget there's 450 volunteers here.
Yes.
There's somebody's going to be able to help you out if you need that.
My experience today and watching Steve and Deb, I would recommend anyone put their hand up to
be a volunteer at the Monday Bash.
Yeah.
So what about the Birdsville Bash? Is it something you think that both you ladies might like to have a crack at? Is it on your bucket list, Deb, or yours, Chrissy?
Look, I think it is on my bucket list, but I am concerned about the trip.
Yep.
There.
So you definitely want to...
Yeah, I'd need someone.
You'd want to go within a group.
Yeah.
And that's a sensible thing. That's a sensible thing to do.
I mean, when I leave here, I'm heading down to the Great Ocean Road.
Okay.
And then doing the coast road all the way home.
Okay.
To Coffs. But I've got contacts all the way
along the way along. Yeah.
And I'm short enough I don't have to pop my roof on my pop-top caravan. I can walk around in there without
having to raise the roof up.
And there's phone and internet service too, so you don't have to be so anxious.
That was a bit of the scary thought.
So you're going to continue on your own, Chrissy, and Deb and your husband, you guys are just...
Unfortunately, back to work.
Back to work. Somebody's got to keep the country running.
That's right.
So what do you think you're going to be doing tomorrow, Chrissy? Like, Deb's a full-time marshal on the roads. You did a day today in the information centre.
I'm going over to put my name down to do another shift.
Shift tomorrow?
In the information centre.
Because there's so many things to do. They've got the toilet angels, which apparently love that job. I thought it would be quite uncomfortable, unpleasant, but they all think it's great. Yeah.
Steve did a Danny Angel job last April, didn't you?
All righty. Mm. I'll have to talk to Steve about the Dunny Angel later, maybe, I think. Okay.
I'm a little bit restricted with how long I can stand or sit. Okay. So a position where I can sit and stand up and down.
Up and down.
Is good for me, and that worked well.
Fair enough.
Yep. They accommodated you very well.
They did.
Yeah, they've looked after you, and I'm sure they'll find you something to do tomorrow. Yep. And By the time the bash is over, you would have probably done a little bit in each role, so when you put your hand up next year, they'll be able to utilise you in any department.
Something hopefully.
A roaming volunteer. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Girls, I've got to wind this up now. It's been fabulous talking to both of you. Thank you so much, Debbie.
Same to you. Thanks, Mark. Lovely to meet you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. That's Debbie Ford, listeners, and Chrissy Huxley from Coffs Harbour. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk today, girls.
Thank you.
I'm going to wind her up. What can I play? I've got to play a song. It's got to be Aussie. What's your favourite Aussie song?
Keith Urban, Making Memories of Us.
Oh, fabulous. I think Making Memories of Monday Bash is definitely what you're going to be doing at this experience.
Oh, most definitely.
All righty. Stick around for more of Roman Oz, listeners, straight after Making Memories of Us by Keith Urban. Thank you so much for your time today, girls.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be a man of my word. Speak the language in a voice that you have never heard. I wanna sleep with you forever, and I wanna die in your arms, in a cabin by a meadow where the wild. Like nobody loves you, and I'll earn your trust making memories of us. I wanna honor your mother, and I wanna learn from your pa. I wanna steal your attention like a bad outlaw. I wanna stand out in a crowd for you, a man among men. I wanna make your world better than it's ever been. And I'm gonna love you like nobody loves. Trust making memories of us. We'll follow the rainbow wherever the four winds blow, and there'll be a new for you from now on. This you know somehow. You've been stretched to the limits, but it's all right now. And I'm gonna make you this promise, if there's life after this, I'm gonna be there to meet you with a warm. Yes, I am. And I'm gonna love you like nobody loves you, and I'll earn your trust making memories of us.
hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.